many workers will be required to come back to the office full-time in 2025.
I will order federal workers to get back to the office in person or be terminated from the job immediately.
And it's not just the federal government. There are compelling reasons why companies want their people back in the building.
The downsides of working remotely is you don't have that face-to-face interaction with your bosses, with your teammates. And so sometimes if you're standing around the water cooler and spitballing ideas on a new project, those ideas don't flow as well over Zoom or through the internet.
Today is Thursday, December 26th, and this is The Issue from VOA. I'm Scott Walterman in Washington.
Stand together! Don't turn back!
Stand together!
Power to the workers!
That was a protest by Amazon workers back in May of 2023 when they were told they had to return to the office. Many workers are facing this new reality heading into 2025 after years of working from the comfort of home, and they're now being told it's time to return to the office full-time for the first time since the coronavirus pandemic. Workers at Amazon, AT&T, and other companies have been called back to the office 5 days a week. And if the incoming Trump administration has its way, it will happen to federal workers as well. It's a trend happening all over the world as employers think it's time. Now, I remember personally saying back when the pandemic took hold that people were never going back to the office. But working in isolation does have its downside. Here's an interview from April 2021 with someone who understood that even then, when most people were working from home.
We are social animals. Businesses are creative and they strive and they work because people are working together and sitting together and putting their heads together.
That was Herbert Zanier, co-owner of Noosa Kitchen in downtown London. Let's talk about this. Joining us now is Evan Starr, professor of management and organization at the Robert H. Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. Thank you so very much for being able to take time to talk to us about this.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
So 2025, I think, is going to be the year that people came back to the office from the pandemic. A lot of companies, Amazon, AT&T, are telling people it's time. 5 days a week, come back to the office. Big transition for people.
It's a big transition for people. It's a big transition for companies. And I think what we've learned over the last few years in this experiment in remote work is that there's a large swath of workers who really value remote work and for whom it's good for employers as well. And I do expect a bit of a backlash from workers who are used to remote work, especially women, those who have needs they have to take care of at home, to have a bit more backlash. And I could see companies struggling with retention for some of those individuals, and that's going to present opportunities in the labor market for companies that can staff those roles in remote work.
What are the advantages of remote work?
Well, if you are able to work remotely and you have little kids and you're managing daycare situations, it gives you flexibility. You don't have to run to the office and then run back and manage daycare and work. You can work from home and take care of the dinner prep when you have a spare moment during your lunch break. You can Skype in, you can work from anywhere. And so you can be somewhere where it's less expensive for you, where you have family nearby. There's a lot of benefits to remote work for workers. Maybe if you're stuck in New York City and you're paying high rent and you want to get out and you can afford, much more somewhere else and be near family and take care of, your kids in a way that gives you more time, have more real income. It can be a huge boon to a wide swath of the workforce.
What are the downsides for working remotely?
Well, the downsides of working remotely is you don't have that face-to-face interaction with your bosses, with your teammates. And so sometimes if you're standing around the water cooler and spitballing ideas on a new project, those ideas don't flow as well over Zoom or through the internet as they do when you're in person and you're really working together and you can be fully committed to a particular project. And so there are benefits, of course, to the individual, but there can be costs to the organization. And I think many organizations are moving to sort of a hybrid model where they try to sync in time the team meetings where everybody can be together, but then also allow people to work from home to give them those benefits.
I understand that it's also difficult to mentor your younger workers because they're not interacting with the experienced workers.
Absolutely, yeah. The people who may need to be one-on-one with a senior worker to watch them work in the trenches and to learn from them, it's hard to do that online. And so you can imagine that younger workers may not be getting the on-the-job training that they would get if they were in person.
It also impacts the world around the businesses. Office space providers and restaurants near office space and, all of the ancillary industries that feed off of a in-person workforce, right?
Absolutely. You've got the transit systems that get you from miles away from the office to the office. You've got the expensive downtown buildings that are empty. During the COVID pandemic, there was what they called a donut effect, where if you're living in the expensive downtown city center, that everyone kind of moves outwards a little bit because you don't have to be downtown. And so it absolutely affects the rental value of the properties, the restaurants, everybody working nearby. At the same time, it just changes the geographic distribution of the demand for those products, because now instead of being in a city center, now there's going to be more demand outside where the people have moved to.
I want to expand the conversation a little bit, if we can, to other things that you see coming in 2025 and beyond. Is there going to be a shift in the employer-employee relationship with the being fueled by the new administration and the Republican-controlled Congress? It seemed like there was a lot of a union resurgence, particularly during the Biden administration. Last 4 years, they were very visible in promoting and supporting union workers.
Well, I think if you step back for just a moment, unionization rates have fallen quite low since their peaks after World War II, and the Biden administration was concerned about worker power broadly, especially as a way to combat what they saw as sort of excess corporate power. And if you think about what some of the Biden antitrust agencies have done, they've gone after very large companies for using their corporate powers in ways that could be illegal. And the flip side of that is they've been also very interested in strengthening worker power, in particular by emphasizing unions and trying to grow unionization rates in the U.S. You also have the Biden administration doing things like focusing on non-compete agreements and wanting labor markets to be more competitive for workers. You had the Biden administration focusing on non-disclosure agreements and all sorts of other kind of worker-centric policies. It does seem like the Trump administration is more anti-union, it's yet to be seen on how they feel about corporate power and who they nominate for some of the antitrust agencies, whether we're going to see a continuation on that front. But it does seem like the Trump administration is going to be less pro-union.
We see a lot of union movements in companies like Amazon and Starbucks and places that weren't previously unionized, but companies that employ huge numbers of people.
I think that, if you're in a work environment that poses a risk to you, where you feel like you're being underpaid and your benefits are low, then unionization gives you an opportunity to demand better benefits in exchange, you know, for working there. And that's because as a single worker, your voice is relatively small and they don't necessarily have to listen to you if they can replace you fairly easily. And so the, you know, the collective power of worker voices can kind of improve the workplace generally.
You said that you've seen the long-term downtrend of union membership and union strength. Do you think that's leveling off, turning around, more of the same?
I think that we saw during the Biden administration, because of the emphasis on it, certainly an uptick in unionization efforts. Whether that's going to continue, my sense is that these things take time. And as individuals see that there maybe are benefits to being in a union, that they could continue to grow. At the same time, I don't see them returning to what they were sort of after World War II, and especially given the current political environment sort of being anti-union. I don't imagine that the policies that will be passed in the next few years would be supportive of unionization broadly.
Anything else do you think that we should be on the lookout for the next year, two, three?
Well, I think it'll be interesting. If Trump and the Trump administration goes through and passes many of these tariffs, it's very possible that inflation could tick up. And I think that one of the things that we saw under the Biden administration was strong real wage growth that we really hadn't seen for quite some time. The thing about real wage growth is that it means that net of inflation, workers have more take-home pay. And if inflation ticks up because of these tariffs, then you could start seeing declines in real wages, and that would be troubling for workers. So that would be something to look out for.
So I just want to understand. So if inflation starts to tick up again, even though you got a raise last year, the inflation ameliorates the raise?
Exactly. Gotcha. If you got a raise of $100, but your groceries are now, you know, much more expensive, that raise just doesn't go as far.
So, what do you think caused the uptick in wage?
Well, I think the Biden administration was particularly concerned about issues in labor market competition. And if you go back to one of the first executive orders, President Biden talked about competition in labor markets. And this concern that workers were not necessarily getting a fair shake. And there's been kind of a wide swath of research over the last decade suggesting that labor markets for the typical worker are in fact not all that competitive. And so you saw various agencies take issue with, things like non-compete agreements, which prevent workers from taking jobs in their chosen industry. And a variety of other related policies that the Biden administration put forth to look at labor market competition. And so I think, you know, there are many factors, of course, but the Biden administration's focus on ensuring labor markets are competitive so that workers are paid what they're worth was probably one of the driving factors.
Hmm. Professor Starr, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much. Yeah, have a great day.
Evan Starr, a professor of management and organization at the Robert H. Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. People have their preferences. Some people like coming into the office. Some people like staying home. It is the new navigation in the new world, 2025. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA in Washington and in all of our VOA bureaus around the world, thank you so much for spending this time with us. You can follow The Issue on X and Blue Sky and Facebook at VOA The Issue. We'd love to know what you think. And for news 24/7, whenever you want it, just go to our website, voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.